You are listening to Purdue's number one sports talk radio show, Sports Night.
You ready? Let's go!
Burbush looks at the throw. Pump fakes again. He throws. 1, 15, 10, 5. Touchdown, Purdue!
Moore has it. Head to Johnson. He'll dunk it!
Marv waiting for the snap. Marv takes the snap. He's in. Touchdown. The Boilermakers win in overtime. Robert Marv with the touchdown.
Lewis comes down right side. Drives to the corner. Anthony Johnson shoots a three. Bullseye at the horn. Up over the basket. Top of the circle. Shoots a three ball. Bullseye! Ron Harbaugh!
Robinson over the middle. It's intercepted. Ricardo Allen, they score. He's at the 30. He's at the 40. One man to beat. It's Robinson. Robinson can't get him. He's at the 30. The 20. 15. 10. 5. Touchdown, Ricardo Allen. A 92-yard interception return.
Guess who's back? Back again. Guess who's back?
We're going to be broadcasting from a hot tub full of scotch.
Kane is in the building.
Yeah! All right, I'm ready to show.
Good evening, sports fans, and welcome to Sports Night. I'm Mike Tainer.
I'm Mike Becca.
And I'm Steve Pedraza. Hope you all are having a good, good winter out there. I know we haven't done a show since, the pregame of the Penn State crashing.
Yeah.
Football team.
And you had that great picture, you know.
Yes.
That was right after Halloween.
Yeah, you dressed up as Bane.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that was good.
Oh, God.
Some good Photoshop action from Steve there.
It took only 2 seconds, but how are you guys doing out there, Mike and Mike?
That's pretty good. Snowing pretty hard here in Indianapolis.
Now it's snowing by you. I don't even want to hear you talk about snow. I'm in Chicago right now. We've got about 8 inches of snow. Tanner, I know.
I've been blessed. Yet.
Yeah, it's been.
We had right in the middle of winter break when I came back to Purdue, right after Christmas, there was a huge blizzard.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's been nothing. I mean, even now, you know, Mike's talking about snow and Steve says he's 8 inches under. There's nothing on. I mean, there's very little on the ground.
And
here.
It's not that light, fluffy stuff, too.
No.
It's that heavy, wet. Oh.
That's the worst. Are you out there shoveling, Steve? You better be.
My parents.
There you go.
It is what it is, but glad everything's all right. Mike, Becca, that is, and settled down in Indianapolis now.
No, it's a lot better here. I like being in Indy. I'm close to Purdue, so I can go back for the games. I did buy season football tickets for next year.
Yeah, I heard about that. And you're in like a legitimate city. What were you before that random middle of nowhere?
Bloomington, yeah, it was the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, at least now you're in
Illinois, Bloomington.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bloomington, Indiana's at least got life.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you know, so I wouldn't provide like
so
Indiana.
How far are you from the city?
It'd probably take me like 10 minutes to get to like Conseco or the football field. There you go.
And, Tanner.
That football field.
Yeah.
West Lafayette, same old time.
I'm still here, yeah. It's nothing different. Looks exactly the same. There was a typhoid fever that went out in the Marriott.
I saw
Hall.
That. Yeah, that's yes. Scary.
It wasn't a big deal. It didn't spread. But yeah, I mean, I remember getting a report about that. And then I read it in the expo, and I'm like, crap. That's the last thing you need is to get sick like that.
You didn't by chance go to the prices right there.
No, I actually didn't. I heard it was actually not that eventful.
Come on down.
I mean, somebody at work went there, and she actually talked about how it was nothing like the show. I mean, it wasn't as exciting, I don't know, but that's probably because they weren't filming it. So they could care less about, you know, all the TV stuff, the drama.
Yeah.
So.
Because that's the best part about Price is Right.
Yeah.
And the model.
Yeah.
Of course. That's a given.
Anyways, we got a fantastic show lined up for you guys this evening. We're going to let you know what's happening in Purdue Athletics. Mike, and I will break down the Purdue men's basketball season. Regular season game left. Tonight, actually, is one of the Final Four as we take tip off against Iowa in about 20 20 minutes in Iowa. We'll also talk about the Purdue baseball team as the Boilers opened their 2013 campaign 2.5 weeks ago. We will talk some NFL as the NFL Combine wrapped up just yesterday and started over the weekend. Finally, we'll talk about some news in the world of sports in our segment, Headline Crosshair. Mike and Mike, haven't said this in a long, long time. You guys ready to go?
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely.
All right, Mike, start it off.
All right, let's start it off with Back in Black this past week, or this past God knows how long, in Boilermaker Athletics.
The number 22 Purdue women's basketball team currently has a record of 20-7, 9-5 in Big Ten play. The Lady Blues last played this past Sunday as the team took on Minnesota. The ladies defeated the Gophers 75-63. KK Hauser and Dre Mingo both scored 14 points each. The number 22 Purdue women's basketball team will take the court again Thursday at home versus Michigan State.
The number 69 Purdue men's tennis team has opened their season up to a 9-3 record. The team played past Saturday versus Arkansas and lost to the Razorbacks 4-3. The Purdue men's tennis team will compete again March 2nd at home versus Bradley in Green Bay.
Can I ask a quick question? What's up with that number 69? Like, they go that high up in the rankings in tennis?
Yes, I believe it's up to 80.
Wow.
Oh, okay. Because we're used to like the top 50 in sports. But
that's quite a few.
Isn't it?
Yeah, that's a lot. But anyway, the number 20 ranked Purdue men's women tennis team is off to a 4-1 start to the 2013 season. The Boilers took on number 45 ranked Kansas State this past Sunday and defeated the Wildcats 4-2. Tess Bernard Fiegenbaum clinched the match for Purdue for the second straight week.
The Purdue men's golf team has been hitting links since early February. 2 weeks ago, the Boilers took part in the Puerto Rico Classic and finished 14th with a team score of 897. The Purdue men's golf team will take to the links again March 16th in the Mission Inn Spring Spectacular in Howie in the Hills, Florida.
That's another town.
It is.
Howie in the Hills.
It's not like quite like French Lake, Indiana there, but yeah.
Still a good one.
Imagine having to write that on the postcard. Oh, God.
The number 10 Purdue women's golf team has also been hitting the links since early February. This past weekend, the ladies took part in the All-State Sugar Bowl Intercollegiate Golf Classic, where they finished 5th place with a team score of 591.
The Purdue wrestling team currently has an 18-6 record and a 5-3 Big Ten record. This past weekend, the Boilermakers took on Buffalo and Franklin Marshall. Purdue defeated both opponents by double digits. The Purdue wrestling team will take to the mat again on March 10th in the Big Ten Championships.
The Purdue softball team is off to a 6-9 start this season. The ladies are coming off a loss to the University of Texas at San Antonio 2-1 this past Sunday. The Purdue women's softball team will try to get back in the win column this Friday versus Texas A&M Corpus Christi.
Purdue head coach Dora Hazel announced the signing of 23 student-athletes to national letters of intent to play for the Boilermakers early this month. The class features three early enrollees in quarterback Danny Etling, defensive end John Strasser, and running back David Yancey. The group hails from 7 different states, with 5 each from Georgia, Florida, and Ohio, 3 each from Illinois and Indiana, and 1 each from Kentucky and Texas.
The Purdue men's basketball team currently has a record of 13-14 and their 6-8 record in the Big Ten. The Boilers are scheduled to take on Iowa tonight at 8:30 p.m. Eastern, and we'll keep an eye on that game as the night goes on. So the last game Purdue played, we took on Northwestern this past Sunday in Mackey Arena, and we defeated the Wildcats 74-43. Tyrone Johnson led the game with 22 points, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, and 1 steal. Now, you guys, as we know, this season hasn't been too bright. We did actually snap a 3-game losing streak against number 12 ranked Michigan State, Illinois, and then, of course, the number 1 ranked Indiana Hoosiers. What are your thoughts on the games? Any of them?
I mean, those 3 games were all very similar. They just didn't play as a team. And then I don't know what clicked in that Northwestern game, but they looked.
It was the week off. That was the thing. We played Indiana on the 16th and then played Northwestern this past Sunday on the 24th. That's a week off. That's a good week to recuperate, allow Matt Painter to get these guys' heads back in the game, because those 3 games against Michigan State, Illinois, and Indiana were just horrendous. I mean, A.J. Hammonds, our go-to player, was irrelevant. I mean, he scored 30 against Indiana. I believe he was under 5 points in that game a week and a half ago.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
just been a lackluster effort from this Purdue team. Very uncharacteristic from a Matt Painter team.
I mean, it was just, I mean, it just looked like it looked like in all those games, it just, you know, it could have been guys that they picked from the stands to come play for the team. I mean, seriously, it just looked terrible.
There was no hustle?
No. There was nothing. I mean, all the big guys looked like they had no clue what was going on. I remember, I think Steve and I were, I think we were all texting during the Indiana, or after the Indiana game, at how pathetic guys like Sandy looked, and it was just not good. They looked like they had no clue what they were doing.
At least Sandy gave some sort of effort. I mean, Sandy doesn't look to have the hand-eye coordination of a big man. Sometimes he's a little bit wild, and a lot of times he travels under the basket, and it just for some reason doesn't get called. I mean, he's just walking all over the place. But he brings energy to the team every time he's out there because he wants to play. He wants to get every rebound. The energy he gives 110%. That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I thought he very well earned his playing time in the Northwestern game.
I mean, in that Indiana game, he played 17 minutes and had seven points. He had A.J. Hammonds at six. So right there, you know, Sandy, who hasn't been playing that much this year, outscoring A.J. Hammonds, one of the impressive freshmen in all of the Big Ten. But in that three-game stretch, A.J. Hammonds just went cold. The offense just went cold. There was no motion, no effort.
Yep.
And
I agree.
It's just for that to come from a Matt Painter team, especially defensively. I mean, giving up 83 points to Indiana. Looking back at their other schedule here, 79 to Illinois, who at that time Illinois was coming off a hot streak, you know, beating Indiana in the final seconds,
right?
And you know, giving up 78 points to Michigan State, their defense is just, you know, always remember what, you know, Mackey Arena, time to play hard, defense lives here, and that just hasn't been the case for Purdue at all this Big Ten season.
You know what's the most frustrating thing, I think, in general? Just the fact that the Big Ten is so good this year.
It is.
And go figure, the one year that the Big Ten truly is arguably the best conference out there, Purdue has nothing to do with it. I mean, right now there's seven teams that could easily make the tournament: Minnesota, Illinois, Ohio State, Michigan, Wisconsin, Michigan State, and Indiana, obviously. But it's just, you know, to see all these good teams playing, like, you know, Minnesota just upset Indiana. They're 19-9. They're pretty much going to get in unless they completely tank the rest of the season. So that's seven teams, and then you got Purdue at 13-14. I mean, even if Purdue wins out, the best thing you're going to do is get the NIT.
Yeah,
I mean, if that.
Yeah.
If that. I mean,
I think at this point that it'd probably be best if they don't go anywhere and just use the offseason to kind of gather themselves and figure out where they're going to go next year.
Yeah, I mean, this is the kind of time where Matt Painter's really got to look at some of his guys like A.J. Hammonds and tell them, I mean, this is how it could be, or, you know, if you work your butt off in the offseason, we could be contending, you know, in the next year or two.
Yeah.
Or you can be satisfied with where we're at, and we're going to be, you know, just an average team, you know, until you graduate. So this is really the first time in a long time that Matt Painter is going to have an offseason where he's really got to figure out what pieces he needs and what he needs to do to his players to get them to improve. Because let's be honest, in the recent past, I mean, it's pretty much been just, you know, kind of reboot.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, even last year. I mean, the team wasn't as great as it was, but I mean, it was still a tournament team, and we almost beat Kansas.
Yeah, it's been a reality check because this team doesn't have Robbie Hummel. It doesn't have one of the, you know, big signings from 5 years ago that Matt Painter signed.
Yeah, we don't have
one of those guys.
Yeah, I mean, and you also look during that three-game stretch, DJ Bird was absolutely terrible. There was one game where he didn't take a shot. He would play. Yeah. I forget how many minutes he played. He didn't even attempt one shot.
Right. Well, I mean, when you look at the team leaders on this team, I mean, you got Tyrone Johnson, who's averaging 13.2, and A.J. Hammonds, who's 10.9. I mean, that's not spectacular at all. I mean, A.J. Hammonds is leading the team in rebounds with 6.5. I mean, there isn't a player on this team that you sit there and you look at and you think, oh, man, this guy's a future stud. I mean, A.J. Hammonds is, don't get me wrong. I mean, he can be really, really good. But other than that, these are, like we talked about earlier, these are a lot of just role players.
Role players, exactly.
There's no studs. There's no stars on this team.
Right. I know we've been talking about focusing on the effort of this team. Let's talk about another sign: turnovers. I mean, this is a very young team, you know, with Raphael Davis, Ronnie Johnson, A.J. Hammonds. A lot of turnovers from these young, you know, immature players, as a good example for it.
Yeah,
it's been a lot of growing pains for this team, and you know, we want to say Baby Boilers 2.0. but I really haven't seen that comparison to the Baby Boilers of Robbie Hummel, Lito Moore, Juwan Johnson. This team, yes, they're young, but I think the talent level is just a little bit under that signing class 5 years ago. And it's just growing pains, and hopefully, you know, these guys mature and get this thing together, because Purdue right now is last in the Big Ten in turnover margin, and that's something Purdue usually strives on, you know, defensively, getting the, you know, turning the, having the opponent turn the ball over, and us minimizing the turnovers, and that usually leads to us with more turnover points, and that's been one of the big differences in Purdue being a successful team over the past 5 years.
Yeah, exactly. But one thing that's kind of hurt Purdue over the past 5 years was rebounds, and I feel like that's one area that they've definitely gotten better at this year.
For sure. I mean, right now the team is averaging right around 40 rebounds per game. That's 14th best in the nation. So, rebounding, that's something we didn't see at all from Painter's teams with the Big Three.
Exactly.
And now we have the rebound, and now we just don't have the scoring.
Yeah.
Now we're kind of seeing a lack of effort defensively, which we never see from a Matt Painter team. Also three-point shooting. You know, DJ Bird, like you said, Becca, is really, you know, coming off last year being named sixth man of the year in the Big Ten. It really has been a struggle for him his senior year. What are you guys' thoughts on him so far this season with four games left and one or two games left in Big Ten tournament play?
I mean,
go ahead, Mike.
All right. Well, I was just gonna say, I mean, you can tell that, you know, teams are definitely keying on DJ Bird when he's not going to be open. I mean, when we had Robbie Hummel last year, he was going to draw two guys every time. You know, you can kick it out to Bird and he can shoot a three, but when he's our really our only legitimate outside threat, it's easy to cover him.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to say the exact same thing. Without Robbie Hummel, DJ Bird doesn't have that kind of luxury of just hanging around and getting nice, easy shots or getting easy drives or just... Robbie Hummel made the game, bottom line, a lot easier for DJ Bird. And you can tell this year, it's just, he's had problems. I mean, he's fourth in the team in points, so, you know, he's not... You know, a lot of people were hoping that if this team could do anything, they, you know, you need guys like him to go out and score, you know, 12, 13 points a game, which he just can't do. Without anybody drawing double teams or anything like that, DJ Bird's ability for open shots and stuff like that just gets diminished. I mean, he's average-wise, his three-point shooting's not bad, but when your field goal percent shooting is only 2 points higher than your three-point percent,
that's
not good.
No.
And DJ Bird just, you know, his averages are down this year, and it has a lot to do with not having Robbie Hummel on the court.
Do we want to mention free throw shooting? Because there's been a lot of games where I feel Purdue could be, you know, two or three possessions down, but instead they're five to six possessions down just because of missed free throws.
I agree. I mean, like Matt Painter said, he's said this team does not play well down by more than 10. And a lot of these games you look, I mean, we're missing, you know, we're losing like 13 or 14 points a game at the line.
Right. Well, nobody on this team is shooting above 800.
No, they're not.
From the free throw line. DJ Bird's leading the team at 767. I mean, that's pretty much three quarters of your free throws? It's not good.
No.
There's nobody on this team who's a solid free throw shooter.
Yeah, team-wise, they're shooting just 63%. That's 11th in the Big Ten.
Yeah.
And that's not going to cut it when you see teams like Indiana, Illinois, Michigan State, Michigan and Ohio State in the top five there. Teams that are all destined to go to the big dance, which is only 2.5 weeks away, March 16th.
Coming up. It's coming up.
It's coming fast. The only way Purdue gets in there is if they win the Big Ten tournament in a couple weeks. But hopefully we see some resemblance of the team that played Northwestern this past Sunday in tonight's game. I know tip-off is just a little bit, 7 minutes away, or depending on the Penn State Michigan game, which is going on right now. Becca, do you have that score?
I do. I was going to interrupt you guys earlier for a scoreboard update, but it is tied at 74.
Is it sponsored by Nike?
It is sponsored by Nike. All right, just do it.
That's funny.
With these recorded show podcasts, whatever you want to call them, there will be no scoreboard update. Sorry to all our past listeners. No scoreboard update sponsored by Nike. Just do it. Anyways,
he still gets the sponsorship in.
Maybe a
gotta help them out.
Yeah, maybe a Nike rep hears us, and maybe they'll throw us some gear or something.
Yeah, we need to get those black jerseys for Purdue.
Never know.
The black helmets.
Ooh, yeah, I like that. And have you seen? I know we're getting off topic. The proposed plan for Ross-Ade Stadium with that south end zone look.
Yeah, the double deck in the back.
Yeah, and then the train.
It would be cool.
Have you seen that? Yeah, it actually looks pretty nice, and I think that would be a way of making the stands look more filled with getting rid of that south end zone.
Yeah.
Even in Big Ten play, even when I know ticket sales are down, it just didn't sell. I mean, I've seen it full. Notre Dame game doesn't count because it's Notre Dame and it's always a sellout. But any other Big Ten game, that south end zone is just half filled.
Yeah.
Or half full, whatever you want to say it. Half empty, half full, glasses half full, whichever way you like it. So we'll keep an update on the Purdue men's basketball team as they take on Iowa in 5 minutes, hopefully, depending on the Penn State Michigan game. You guys ready to move on to the Purdue baseball team?
Yep,
absolutely.
Becca, start us off.
All right, the Purdue baseball team is off to a 3-5 start to the 2013 campaign. Purdue has defeated Connecticut twice and Samford. The Boilers have lost to South Florida, number 4 Louisville, number 5 Mississippi State twice, and Samford. There are a lot of new faces in this Purdue lineup from last year's Big Ten championship team.
Yes, there have been. And currently, in this 8-game stretch hitting, team is batting 253, slugging percentage is .314, on base percentage is .318. The team has 70 total hits and fielding percentage, which last year was our, Schreiber stress defense. Currently, the fielding percentage is about 97%. And in pitching, the team has an ERA of 6.17, as we stated earlier, a 3-5 record, 36 walks allowed in 8 games. Do the math real quick. How many is that per game, Tanner?
3, 4, it's about 5. Well, it's under 5 because 5 would be 40. So it's, in between. Okay. Right in between 4 and 5. So about 4.5 walks a game.
All right. And pitching staff has a combined 37 strikeouts. Thoughts so far on the young but talented Purdue baseball team?
I mean, I think it's kind of the same way as basketball. I mean, when you have a great group that goes on, to win the Big Ten, and you get a lot of departures, you're going to get a lot of people who weren't playing a lot the previous season. But that means, hopefully over the next few seasons, these guys will build and get better, and, hopefully Purdue will, remain near the top in the baseball standings for the Big Ten.
Tanner?
Yeah, I agree. I think, deep down in your heart, you always want your team, especially you want your college team to be able to do what all the super teams do and just rebuild.
Right.
But Purdue, especially baseball, hasn't had that reputation since. I mean, they hadn't won the Big Ten. How long was that? I mean, almost
1908, same as the Cubs.
Yeah, it's Cubs style baseball right there. So
yeah.
The reputation isn't that of a team that's going to just be able to rebuild like that. So, yeah, you have a lot of young pieces. I mean, anytime you have almost just about as many walks as strikeouts, that's not good.
No, it's not.
In a team ERA over 6, 3-5, it could be worse. At bottom line, it could be worse right now. So, you still got plenty of baseball ahead, but absolutely, there's going to be a lot of learning curves from this team, just like there are the basketball team.
Right.
Exactly.
Right. To start off the season, Purdue played in the Big East Big Ten Challenge with a couple of good wins. Both coming from Connecticut, but especially in the first game of the season, Purdue was down 8-7. I want to say in the seventh inning. I was following on Twitter because it's hard to it's not on TV, and the only way you can listen is through PurdueSports.edu, .com, but. One thing from Purdue comparing last year's team to this year's team is, or just looking back at last year's team, is they always were able to come back from behind when down one or two runs. You always had the back of your mind, all right, they're going to come back. They've done this before. And, first game of the season, you're down 8-7, and you're able to come back and win that game by 3, 11-8. I thought that was a big way to start off the season, maybe get some momentum coming off of last year's Big Ten championship season. And then they had a tough outing against South Florida the second game of the season, losing 20-2.
Yeah, that's rough.
I mean, you got crushed in that game.
That is, I tried to look back. In the last 2 years, Doug Driver's team has never lost that to that big of a deficit. And to lose to South Florida, an unranked team, I believe they were in a tournament. I wasn't quite sure. I was going to look that up in a second. But, you know, a Big East team, that didn't bode well with me. And then losing to number four Louisville, I know last year we won at home. That was the first, wasn't that the first home game, Becca? The Louisville game that we went to?
Yeah.
At Alexander Field. They lost 9-4, and then their fourth game in the Big East Big Ten Challenge was versus Connecticut, where they won 5-3. And then this past weekend, the Diamond Classic at Dudley Noble Field in Mississippi, you know, they played two teams last year who were in the NCAA tournament in Samford and Mississippi State. Mississippi State, who's ranked number 5, could never get a W in versus Mississippi State. Did start off well versus Samford, coming off a 9-4 win. This is all going to be dependent on the leadership of last year's team, last year's veterans, or this year's veterans. What do you guys think from Angelo Cianfranco? We got Stephen Talbot and
Sean McHugh.
Most notables from last year's championship season. What do you think? How do you think those guys can impact this team and help this team get through, you know, this little early season struggle?
I mean, what they got to tell these guys, you know, especially in baseball, you know, it's not a marathon. It is a marathon. It's not a sprint.
Right.
The baseball season's long. You're nowhere near Big Ten play yet. You know, and having a 3-5 record, it's not like they're down in the dumps. Granted, the team stats are bad, but I mean, 3-5 is you can work back from that. You know, and bottom line, no matter how good or bad or how talented or not talented your team is, you always have to have faith in the fact that you can pull it off. Even though, I mean, deep down in your heart, you probably know you're not going to. Do you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, even look at Kobe Bryant, the Los Angeles Lakers, saying they're going to make the playoffs. I mean, you got to be kidding me. But that's what you got to believe.
Right.
So, you know, these guys who've been there and done that and have experienced, you know, the Big Ten championship last year, they can tell these guys that, you know, regardless of how bad we feel or how rough this start's been, losing 3 in a row now, you know, it's a long season to go, and you can't get your head in the dumps. You know, got to take it one at bat at a time, you know, one out at a time if you're a pitcher, and just get back and focus.
Exactly. Yeah,
Becca,
I mean,
anything to add, Becca?
I was just going to say the same thing. You know, those three guys, especially, you know, Talbot and McHugh, I mean, they need to, you know, lead by example and start getting on base and making good plays, you know, and just, I mean, like Tanner said, you know, they're 3-5. They're not anywhere near out of it. It's a long way to go. String a few more wins together. I mean, we got a couple games coming up against Illinois-Chicago. I know previously we usually do very well against them, so hopefully they can pull that out. I'm looking to actually go see them when they play in Evansville in a couple weeks, so hopefully they can get a nice 3-game stretch down there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in Evansville they play Evansville, coincidentally.
Figure.
Currently, player leading in batting average at .355 is Josh Eastill, taking over the ranks of Kevin Pelwicki at catcher, trading off with Sean McHugh a little bit. He's a junior up and coming star. Big shoes to fill there with Kevin Pelwicki. And second is Jake Hansen at batting .333. And pitching, Brad Schreiber had that big start, opening start versus Connecticut. Currently has a 3.6 ERA in two games started, 10 innings pitched, and has only allowed 4 runs. So, I know it a lot of growing pains. Kind of similar to the Purdue men's basketball team, which we just, you know, talked about. There's going to be some headaches, but you know, knowing Doug Schreiber, he's going to have his ducks in a line, as you so-called will. And, yeah. So, Purdue, looking at the schedule here, they play a well-known foe this weekend, a 3-game series at Samford. You know, as we all know, they went 1-1 versus Samford this past weekend. And so, team, like I said, that was in the tournament last year, should be a good 3-game series. Hopefully the Boilers come out with a series win. I think that would be a big up for this team. What do you guys think?
Definitely. I mean, that's the key. I mean, they don't need to go in there knowing they need to sweep. They just need to go in there, you know, play baseball and at least, you know, try and get one or two wins.
Yeah, you just want to win. You just want to at least get the feeling of winning a series. I mean, the Big Ten Big East Challenge, they came out even 2-2, and then in that Diamond Classic, you know, going 1-3. You just want to. I mean, you just want to come out with a winning feel. So yeah, right. As long as you win the series, get some
especially
get some
on the road
smiles going on. Yeah, on the road, exactly.
Getting a series on the road, I think, would have a big momentum going into a series against Illinois Chicago in 2 weeks. Ooh, maybe I'll go see that. Tanner, that's spring break for Purdue.
We could go down. I mean, it's right there. It's in Chicago.
You could. We'll have to talk about that after this.
We'll look into it
over the weeks. I don't even know where UIC plays. Anyways, we're gonna take a short break. Tanner.
Absolutely. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we will talk some NFL, and as the NFL Combine started this past weekend, and we'll see who the Bears and Colts are interested in. You're listening to Sports Night.
Sports Night keeps you up to date with Purdue Athletics and with news from the world of sports.
Here I am waiting. I'll have to leave soon. Why am I holding on? We knew this day would come. We knew it all along. How did it come so fast? This is our last night, but it's late, and I'm trying not to sleep, 'cause I know when I wake I will have to slip away. And when the day
welcome back to Sports Night. Right now, we're going to dive into some NFL talk and the NFL Combine, which started this past weekend in Indianapolis at Lucas Oil Stadium. Stadium. Not field. Soldier Field. Stadium. Okay. The current projected top five players in the draft are Luke Jokel, offensive tackle out of Texas A&M. He has a grade of 97. Chance Wormack, who's a guard from Alabama, of course, Alabama. He's got a grade of 96. Star Latulalelei, defensive tackle from Utah. Sharif Floyd, which is defensive tackle from Florida. And then number five is D. Milliner, who's the cornerback playing on that Alabama defense. So, first of all, let's start talking about the Bears and the Colts. Who do you guys think, who's on your list for the first number one picks in the first draft for both these two guys? These two teams, excuse me.
Go ahead, Becca.
No, you go ahead, Steve.
All right, I'll go ahead. For the Bears, I feel, you know, with the hiring of Mark Trestman, offensive guy, I feel like, I know this is not, is uncharacteristic of the Bears to go offensively. You know, they usually go defensively. But they have to pick an offensive player here. And it's either going to be, in my opinion, Tyler Eifert, tight end from Notre Dame. We all saw him throughout the season. Most of us who follow just college football. Danny, mm-hmm. you were going to say something?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people have him on their mock draft boards for the Bears at the 20th pick. I noticed that when I was looking at it earlier.
And the tight end position is something the Bears kind of lack in passing.
Yeah, Kellen Davis is terrible.
Oh, no, don't even get me started. Every time the ball came to Kellen Davis, he'd fall down.
Yeah, I know. And he's on like the ground. It's like, dude, you're 6'7", run. you should go truck these guys. Come on. He's huge.
Yeah.
But, oh, God. Kellen Davis is, no. They definitely need a new tight end. So I would be all about
every
that.
Every time he was on the floor, or every time he was on the turf, you know the ball was somewhere in the area. So,
yeah.
Yeah, I think the Bears can go the tight end route with Tyler Eifert, or they could go the offensive, you know, offensive line, offensive tackle. Mm-hmm. One guy I've seen a lot that that people have the Bears choosing is DJ Fluker, offensive tackle from Alabama. 6'4", 355-pound offensive tackle. Big guy. And with news coming today about Jamarcus Webb, I don't know if you guys heard today, he was arrested on drug charges. I don't know if you guys heard that today.
Yeah,
that was late. I got the text from 670 The Score here in Chicago. So with his future, I guess the NFL and the Chicago Bears knew about this, happened over the weekend. They all knew about it up until the day. So they're on top of it, hopefully, and hopefully he doesn't, Jamarcus Webb, he could go to jail or, you know, be off the team.
Tank Johnson style.
Yeah, Tank Johnson style. I mean, this offense, the Bears offensive line just needs a total overhaul, and even with Garza, because he's just old.
Garza's, I mean, the only offensive lineman who you still want to have some hope for, to be honest with you, hope is falling quickly, is Gabe Kareemi.
It is. And I mean, in my opinion, I feel like that leg injury, that knee injury from 2 years ago was still lingering.
Has to be, man, because he was he was the first round pick, and he was a beast at Wisconsin.
Yes.
And you can just tell. He's been on and off the field his whole career with the Bears, you know, with injuries. So you want to be able to see him come in at 100%. I mean, can he do that? I don't know. Chris Williams never could.
Right.
And look what happened to him.
So in my opinion, the Bears have to go the offensive line way, but I could see him going for a tight end. If they go defensively, then I don't know. Granted, I know the defense is aging, and I know a lot of Bears fans are concerned about that, especially here in Chicago, that, you know, questions about, is Brian Urlacher returning? I know we're going to get to the Bears a little bit of Bears talk a little bit later on, so I'll save that for later. But I feel like the Bears just have to go offensively here, especially when they bring in an offensive coach who came in, who was hired to fix this offense.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you. I absolutely love DJ Fluker. I mean, we'll have to see how the cards all play out. But if he's there, because these Alabama, I mean, they've had solid running backs for years, you know, if you think back. And to have, I mean, you need solid offensive linemen. And Alabama produces, you know, their line could pretty much start in the NFL and probably
start for the Bears.
Exactly. I mean, you know, half the college offensive lines could start for the Bears.
True.
But I mean, I absolutely love DJ Fluker. The guy's a brute. He comes from Alabama, so you know he's not going to be a bad lineman. He's got the intangibles. I think he's a great offensive lineman. If they don't pick him, and I had this, we had this chat last week. Mike and I were going back and forth about this, And I'm a little hesitant to say it. I was pretty confident saying it before his combine stuff, but I really wanted to, if he was still there, to see the Bears draft Manti Te'o. Now, I know his stock is like, you know, this is like, you know, the Great Depression. Everyone's trying to sell their stock and go.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, this guy's value's dropping like no one's business. His combine was terrible. We'll have to see how his pro day goes. But, I mean, I was thinking that he could eventually down the line. Now, granted, he's slow and he's, I mean, he can't jump in there and start right away. But if Brian Urlacher stays for two more seasons, I don't know what his plans are, maybe just next year. If you could bring Te'o in and have Urlacher be his mentor for a year,
exactly.
I mean, think about it.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know. His draft, I mean, his combine was terrible.
4.82, 40.
Yeah, I mean, it's not good, but, I mean, I looked at some stuff and they mentioned it on ESPN earlier today. Ray Lewis's was a 4.71.
Right. Yeah,
and he's arguably the greatest linebacker to ever play the game.
They were talking about that on was it First Take or
I think it was First. It was one of them.
Yeah, it was one of them.
But yeah, I mean, if you think Ray Lewis was only a second faster or a tenth of a second faster, I mean, I don't know. We'll have to see. I mean, like they mentioned the pressure moments with Te'o, you know, the national championship game and now the combine, you know, he chokes or whatever. We'd have to see, but I'd like his chances if he learns under Brian Urlacher. I mean, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, I could see that. The only thing that reminds me of Te'o, or you know, that makes me think about Te'o and, you know, him becoming an NFL player is that national championship game where he played as close as he'll ever get currently to an NFL style team in the Alabama, you know, Crimson Tide. He just got pushed around nonstop.
I mean, a lot of linebackers probably would by, you know, Alabama, but he did look terrible in that game.
The whole team looked terrible.
True, yeah. True. But
I mean, I don't,
you know, for a guy that's projected to go in the top in the first round, there's still some questions for me. I know he's got his pro day coming up at Notre Dame in a couple weeks. I know the draft is early April, so he's going to have his pro day at Notre Dame in a couple weeks. I know he's going to have a new 40 time there. I know whoever the Notre Dame stopwatch person is going to shave off probably 2/10, because he said it himself that he can run a 4.6, 4.65 at slowest 4.7 40, and I don't know.
4.82.
I don't know. I don't know if his girlfriend cooked him fried chicken the night before his combine, but you know, it just. I know
it wasn't there.
You can't take the 40. You can't take the combine numbers into effect
and say that that's going to make a good player.
Right. That's going to make or break a player's NFL career. It's just not. But that's just not a good start for him. And there's still a lot of lingering questions, you know, about that whole. Teams want to know about him and this hoax, girlfriend hoax that, you know, happened during our time off from the show.
Right.
I don't think we have to get into it because that was just.
It's everybody knows about it by
very
now.
Very weird. Yes, and everyone knows.
But
about
it is very
it.
Weird.
It is very weird.
And I just think, you know, whoever drafts him is going to want that kind of resolved before he ever makes it, you know, to their camps.
Right.
Oh, and it'll be resolved. I'm sure it'll be internally. I don't know if there's going to be anything public about it, but.
And that's fine. It just needs to be dealt with.
And it will. I mean, these guys, I mean, if you look at what NFL teams have when they go over these kind of draft picks, they have team psychologists, and they have team, I mean, the NFL could pretty much run a city. Each of these teams have, like, a profession from every profession, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
And they have plenty of psychologists, and they're going to, you know, the teams that are seriously looking at him are going to break him down, and they're going to go at him, and, you know, I'm fairly confident that they'll figure out what they need to know.
Exactly.
Becco, who do you like for the Bears?
I like the Bears going after Jarvis Jones from Georgia.
Hmm.
The outside linebacker.
So you think they're going to go defensively, you know, with all the questions surrounding the defense too with Urlacher?
Yeah, listening, you know, to other sports radio, you know, and a lot of people are talking, you know, about Urlacher and what's going to happen, you know, in the very near future. So, it's definitely something you want to be, you know, aware of.
I mean, It's a really tough question because, I mean, who knows how long his knee's going to last.
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
you could tell this year he was having problems.
Right.
I mean he's not the sideline to sideline linebacker he used to be.
Oh, God. Back in the day, man, like, I've never seen a linebacker faster than Brian Urlacher. I mean, it was just not even fair.
Right. Now, since we're talking about the Bears, should the Bears hire or should the Bears re-sign Brian Urlacher?
You know what? I think at this point, I think it should be up to Brian. I mean, I think at a certain point in time, when somebody's been the staple of your team for over a decade, kind of like Ray Lewis, I mean, in my opinion, I mean, granted, the team can do whatever they want, but I think the team has an obligation to give the player what they want. If Brian wants to stay, I mean, obviously, you're not going to sign him to like a 4 or 5 year deal.
Right. You got to be a little hesitant because there is a cap.
I mean, you absolutely do, but I mean, and we've seen it before. Brian Urlacher offered to take a lower contract back when Lance Briggs was having
contract more money.
Yeah, and Lance Briggs wanted more money, and Urlacher said he'd take a pay cut to keep Briggs. So I think Urlacher is a team first kind of guy, and he loves the Bears. And
yeah,
you know, I would be shocked if there were a point. I think Urlacher is going to retire a Bear. If the Bears don't give him a deal and he's okay, I'm going somewhere else. I think they'll be able to pull off a 1 or 2 year deal if they really need to. And like you said, I don't think Urlacher is going to ask for like, you know, $7-8 million, $10 million a year because he knows his value's down. He's not the same linebacker he was. So I think you give him the deal,
yeah,
regardless of his health condition. If he wants to play for the Bears, he's given you more than you could ever ask.
Exactly. Yeah, I feel the same way. I think, you know, they're going to give him the option, and I think he's definitely, you know, willing to negotiate to get what he wants.
Right. It's all going to be dependent on that knee. And, you know, as of right now, he's had, I don't know how long we've been out of since the last regular season game, 2 months. We'll go with 2 months.
Yeah, it's been end of December.
Right, end of December, so 2 months. You know, I think he's going to be in camp regardless, I think. You know, I'm just hesitant because I know he's aging. That knee, you know, his speed, his coverage, his you know, his ability to get deep into coverage, especially in that cover two. I know it's not going to be a Lovie Smith cover two, but this Trestman says they still are going to run similar things to what Lovie Smith ran. It's just very questionable. And, you know, if there is a player out there, a middle linebacker out there, maybe it is Nick Roach, who's also a free agent for the Bears. You know, who can get to that deep secondary, you know, and cover the tight end. That's something Brian Urlacher couldn't do this year.
Right.
It was pretty evident. I think you have to go a different route and just not sign him. And, you know, you got to do it in a respectful way. And I think, you know, if he does sign with another team, he's going to pull an Alex Brown. I don't know if you guys remember earlier this season where Alex Brown just signed a one-day contract because he wanted to retire as a Bear.
Oh yeah, Brian Urlacher or Jeff Saturday did that with the Colts too.
Right, Jeff Saturday did he retire this year?
Yeah, because remember in the Pro Bowl he took that one snap with Peyton Manning.
Oh, that's right.
And that was like his last snap.
Right, that's right. That's right.
So yeah, the Colts signed him to a 1 day deal, and he retired a Colt.
Okay.
So I wouldn't be surprised. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if that happened with Urlacher too. If he does happen to go somewhere else. I wouldn't be surprised if after whatever how many seasons he's going to play, he'll retire a Bear.
We've been talking about the defensive side of the ball. Mark Trestman, being from the Canadian Football League, a more offensive-minded league, sort of what the NFL is becoming now, offensive-minded, bringing a little, you know, with his staff, bring a little Purdue love. Well, Mark Tibbesser, former defensive coordinator for Purdue last year, was on Mark Trestman's coaching staff the year before he came to Purdue in Montreal. The Alouettes, Alouettes. Okay, that's enough. yeah, so we got a Purdue former coach. Super, right? What do you guys think of the Mark Trestman deal? I know there was no home run out there. No home run, you know, there was no big catch in the head coaching shirts for any team.
No, there really wasn't. I mean, there were some high-profile guys out there, you know, Andy Reid. Now, granted, his recent history wasn't that good, but
right.
I mean, you know, he has a good resume to get to the Chiefs. But as far as Trestman goes, I mean, I like it. I mean, look, I mean, the Bears. I mean, at the end of the day, you kind of have to go with the trend of the NFL, and the NFL is becoming a way more offensive-minded league,
right?
Than in the past. I mean, the defenses are still going to be good and valued, but I think at this point in time, especially with Lovie Smith, nothing ever really changed. The offense never really got that much better.
Right.
I mean, and you like to think when you get a quarterback like Jay Cutler, who's got one of the best arms in the league, you'd like to see your offense flourish. And, you know, unfortunately, Lovey was never able to get an offensive coordinator in here that could maintain a good offense.
Right.
So, I mean, I think it's good that they went with an offensive-minded coach. I think that, you know, they'll apply more effort into making the offense better. And in this NFL, that's what you need.
Becca?
I was going to go with a little bit of a scoreboard update. Tyrone Johnson was just carried off the floor, and it did not look good.
Really?
Uh-oh. Yes. If I would say anything, it looked very similar to other injuries we've obviously seen being Purdue fans.
Oh, of course. Here we go. Knee problems.
Wait.
Oh, look.
Can't
you can add Brian Urlacher to that mix.
His first name isn't Rob.
I know, right? They're all Rob.
It looked pretty bad. He went to the locker room.
Really?
Yes.
Well, this team's hopeless anyway. So
hopefully it's just a mild sprain like Taj Gibson here for the Bears.
What, Taj Gibson?
Taj Gibson plays for the Bears?
For the Bulls. Excuse me.
Okay.
Getting a little ahead of myself. Well, right now the Purdue-Iowa score is 17. Iowa to produce 12 points. And right now, Donnie Hale and A.J. Hammonds are leading the team. Hale with 6 points and Hammonds with 4. And D.J. Bird just scored 2 points there for Purdue. So down to a 5-point deficit here midway through the first half. Moving on to the NFL talk, let's talk about the Indianapolis Colts real quick, who had a very impressive season, especially under the rookie quarterback Andrew Luck. Where do you guys think the Indianapolis Colts should go with this first pick?
We'll have to see. I mean, we were talking about during the break. I would think that they're either going to go defensively and a lineman. I know Becca's all pumped up for Kawan Short. you know, they could pick the defensive line because, you know, they already said that they're not going to re-sign Dwight Freeney and he's going to be a free agent. He's gone. You know, and he's arguably one of the greatest, you know, top 10 defensive ends in NFL history. But I think what they need to do is they need to go with an offensive line. They need to go, I'm thinking, you know, either DJ Fluker again, if he's able to go all the way down.
Right.
To the 24th pick, we'll see. Right, he's projected right around 20, you know, where the Bears are. But I'd like to see them get an offensive lineman because, I mean, let's be honest, Andrew Luck, I mean, he could be such a good quarterback, but that offensive line in Indy, I mean, it's not as bad as the Bears, but it's not good. You know, Andrew Luck was running for his life quite a bit of the season. You know, he was able to have those miraculous comebacks, but I think they really got to get some offensive linemen in there to help keep Andrew Luck on his feet because, you know, we already know about sophomore slumps in quarterbacks. You know, you don't want him to all of a sudden fall apart and have a bad season and start losing all the confidence that he gained this year.
Right. Becca?
Yeah, I mean, I like him going after Kawan Short. I think they're going to go defensively, you know, after losing Dwight Freeney.
Yeah, we haven't talked about Kawan Short. His combine stats, he ran a 5.05 40, and his arm length is 33 5/8 inches, and he recorded in at 6'3", 308 pounds. So a big man. Definitely the
big man, yeah.
Definitely a big man.
He's a big boy.
He is a big boy, and we saw a lot of him this year stuffing up the holes and getting pressure on the quarterback, getting sacks, stopping the run. I think if he gets a little bit stronger, maybe cuts down on the weight but gains equivalent in muscle, I think he could be a really good defensive lineman for any NFL team. For me, I think the Colts have to go defensively. I mean, I'm looking at their stats. Yes, they were 7th in passing yards with 258 with Andrew Luck, who should have been Rookie of the Year, in my opinion. Tanner, I see where you're going with the offensive line last year in rushing. They were 22nd in the league with only 104.4 yards per game. But just looking at their defensive stats, they were almost dead last in opponent rushing yards. They gave up about 138 yards per game. Passing, they gave up about 237 yards per game. So I think they have to go defensively here. And I'm looking at defensive tackle Jesse Williams from Alabama. For some reason, I like the Crimson Tide in this draft. We all saw a lot of them in the national championship game.
There's nothing wrong about liking them.
No, there isn't. I mean, when a college team looks like an NFL team, you know that coach is recruiting pretty darn well.
Exactly.
Nick Saban. But, you know, with Williams, his ability to play multiple positions, I think, was going to benefit the Colts 3-4-D. And, well, from what I remember and seeing a little bit of Alabama games, he's a run stuffer, and I think that's exactly what the Colts need, especially when he's able to move from defensive tackle to defensive end, maybe take over the load of Freeney. I think this is exactly what the Colts need. Finally, let's look at overall number one pick, who this year is the Kansas City Chiefs. Some interesting news coming from their camp today is that they traded for quarterback Alex Smith from the 49ers for a second-round pick and a 2014 mid-round pick between the second and fourth round. What do you guys think of that move? Because in my mind, I could have seen Geno Smith, the quarterback from West Virginia, go there at number one. So that answers the question there. He's not going to Kansas City.
No.
What have you read that the Kansas City Chiefs are directing towards?
I think they're going to pick Luke Jokel, especially now that they got Alex Smith. They got their number one quarterback, the guy that they want. and I just think that, you know, giving him a boost, I mean, they got Jamal Charles at running back. I mean, if you get that line worked and ready to go, I mean, the Kansas City Chiefs are a team that, I mean, they had, like, I think six Pro Bowlers year. Now, granted, their record was terrible, but... Right. You get Alex Smith in there, you get Jokel, you know, the top-ranked player in the draft, who is an offensive lineman. You get him and the rest of the line blocking for Alex Smith and Jamal Charles. I mean, I think this team could honestly go from being the worst last year to a playoff contender next year. Right. So I like Luke Jokel.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. I mean, obviously, they've got their quarterback now. They just need somebody, you know, to protect him and give him some time to throw.
See, I could see either Luke Jokel going, the offensive tackle from Texas A&M, or Eric Fisher, the offensive tackle for Central Michigan. Mm. I think Fisher has a higher ceiling and higher capability. Maybe, I mean, it's hard to tell because this is all just combine workout and
right.
You know, all the video we have from their college days. And the one question is for Fisher is he played at Central Michigan, a MAC team. Not much talent. I mean, there's talent there, but not much talent that Jocko saw in the SEC. Just saying that. And Jocko did have Manziel at the quarterback position to make his job a lot less easier. So it's going to be interesting. I do think now Kansas City, the Chiefs are going to go offensive lineman somewhere just to help Alex Smith and, you know, give him some added protection. So that is that. And we did talk a little bit about the Bears and Urlacher and Mark Trestman. It's going to be interesting. I'm actually excited for, like, the mini camps to start, especially with, you know, no Lovey being there. It's a whole new regime, and this is all Phil Emery's team now. You know, last year he came in, you know, being hired from the Bears organization, the McCaskies. You know, he was told that Lovey Smith is their coach for at least 1 year, and now to have fired Lovey Smith and hired his new coach and Mark Trestman, he's going to make his team the way he wants it, and you know. Not many Bears know what to expect from Phil Emery, seeing that he was only a scout before he was the general manager of the Bears. So I think a lot of Bears fans trust him in some essence, but they really don't trust him. You know, it's kind of like the in-between, like, we have to wait and see to see what this team is going to be like this coming year.
Absolutely.
All right, Tanner, you ready for one last final break?
Absolutely. We're going to take one final break, like Steve said, and up next we'll talk about some news in the world of sports in our segment, Headline Crossfire. You're listening to Sports Night.
You are listening to Purdue's number one sports talk radio show, Sports Night.
Best. You can be the King Kong banging on your chest.
You can beat the world, you can beat the war. You can talk the guy, go banging on his door.
You can throw your hands up, you can beat the clock.
Yeah.
You can move a mountain, you can break rocks.
You can be a master, don't wait for luck. Dedicate yourself and you gon' find yourself.
Standing in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And the world's gonna know your name.
Just
distance. You can run the mile. You can walk straight through hell with a smile.
You could be the hero. You could get the gold. Breaking all the records they thought never could be broke.
Yeah, do it for your people. Do it for your pride. You're never gonna know if you never even try.
Do it for your country. Do it for your name. Cause there's gonna be a day when you're
standing in the hall of fame.
Yeah.
And the world's gonna know your name.
Politicians be preachers, yeah. Be believers, be leaders, be astronauts, be champions, be truth seekers, be students, be teachers, be politicians, be preachers,
yeah.
Be believers, be leaders, be astronauts, be champions.
Welcome back to Sports Night. Right now, it's time for our segment, Headline Crossfire.
All right. We haven't done this in a while.
Yeah. It's been
should
a while.
Should we do the sound effects, Tanner?
There you go. Do it.
All right. Go ahead, Ben.
Marian Hossa skated along the boards, pumping his right arm as United Center roared its approval. Go ahead and give him two more points than the streaking Chicago Blackhawks. Hossa scored with a minute and 44 seconds left in overtime, and the Blackhawks beat the Edmonton Oilers 3-2 on Monday night to stretch their NHL record opening point streak to 19 games. I mean, how fun has this team been to watch, guys?
It's been amazing.
It's been absolutely. Go ahead, Steve. Sorry.
And the streak, you know, which was held by the Anaheim Mighty Ducks. Well, they weren't. Maybe they were the Mighty Ducks.
They were. Yeah, I would say they were still the Mighty Ducks
in,
when that happened.
In 2006. I gotta look that up.
Oh, maybe. I know they were in like the 90s. They were still the Mighty Ducks.
They were still the Mighty Ducks. Yeah, anyways, the Ducks had a 16-point streak in 2006 and went on to win the Stanley Cup. The last three teams that have at least 13-point streak opening the season all won the Stanley Cup. So right now there's high expectations for the Chicago Blackhawks team. They've got the depth, they've got the speed, they've got the defense, they've got the goaltending, and they pretty much stayed healthy. I know it was a little scary a week ago with Marian Hossa and that big hit from Hansen from Vancouver.
Yeah, that was scary.
Somehow Hossa, you know, didn't have any concussion symptoms and was able to come back then 3 days later and play San Jose. A little scary. Right now, Dave Bolin's out. He's going to miss his third game tomorrow when they go to St. Louis to face the Blues. It's been magical. I mean, the crowd, the UC. We've had a seven game road trip at the beginning of the season. It goes, I believe, 4-0-2 in that.
Yeah.
It's just been amazing, and a lot has to do with luck. I mean, it's one thing to say the bounces are going towards the Blackhawks, but really they haven't. I mean, it's just been good, solid hockey. And
they're having fun. I mean, you can just tell when they're out there. I mean, it looks like they're out there having fun. They're playing as a team. They're giving each other chances. No one's being selfish. I mean, they're playing some of the best hockey.
And the attitude right now, I mean, in that game versus Edmonton, going into the second intermission, down 2-1.
Yeah.
I don't think there was a person in the building who thought they would lose, because the way this opening part of the season has happened, everyone thought the Hawks were going to score, yeah, you know, tie it up and win in regulation or in overtime.
What's been your favorite game so far? Because I know which one is mine.
Tanner?
That's a tough question. I haven't had a favorite game. I mean, I watched the record game, but that doesn't make it my favorite just because they set the record. I don't know. What's yours, Steve? I honestly don't have a favorite game. I've been on a joyride.
Ooh, there's been a couple. I mean, it was I'm trying to remember on the score. It's been 636 days, something like that, 2 years since the Blackhawks last had a shutout. And so to do it twice in a 2 week span, on the 10th of February versus Nashville, 3-0 at Nashville. A good, solid offensive team, especially with a great goaltender in Pecorine. And then to do it two games ago, 1-0 against Columbus on Sunday the 24th, you know, it's been great goaltending. And I think that's been one of my favorite parts of this season is the goaltending. And my favorite game has to be that Calgary game, February 2nd, where Ray Emery was he had a horseshoe up his ass. That's what I'm going to say.
That was my game. That game was absolutely outstanding. I mean, they were down 2-1 with how many seconds left did Marian Hossa score? It was 2.2 seconds, and Hossa puts it in to take them to overtime, and the Hawks win in a shootout. I mean, that was by far the best game this year. Emery was absolutely outstanding in that game.
Yeah, I mean,
Calgary.
Well, Emery's been outstanding all season. He's only allowing 1.5 goals a game.
Right.
I mean, he. I mean, I don't think he's leading the league, but
no. In the Calgary game, Chicago had 19 shots on goal. Calgary had 47.
Yeah, it was a game Blackhawks usually when you look at the shot total, like you just said, Becca.
Those are games
Blackhawks always lose, and now it's always the opposite. When the Blackhawks have more shots than their opponents, 8 out of 10 times they win that game.
No, the Calgary game was just outstanding. I was watching that whole game, and I could not believe how many shots that he had blocked. And then, you know, to go to overtime with, you know, two seconds left on the clock. I thought it was over.
Right. Tanner, you mentioned earlier the goals against for the Blackhawks right now. They're first in the league with a 1.8 goals against average. That's just disgusting. And to have two goaltenders, usually it's just one goaltender doing all the work, to, you know, have a goalie, you know, fight for time on the ice.
Yeah,
that just bodes well for the Blackhawks.
And Emery and Crawford, they've both been amazing.
Right, they have been. Finishing off some stats or
penalty kill percentage. I mean, that's another one.
Second in the league at 89%. The power play, which is a lot better than last year. Right now, middle of the league at 14th in the league at 18%, and goals per game is 3.1, and that's fourth in the league. So Blackhawks are off to a hot start. I know it's been fun, especially living in Chicago right now, to be a part of it. I know trying to go to a game, just tickets are so darn expensive. It's kind of ridiculous.
Yeah, they're up there.
I have the best season tickets, and that's right on the couch looking over the TV in my family room. That's all I can say.
I got tickets for Good Friday versus the Ducks.
Oh, very nice, very nice.
Didn't they score against Edmonton on Monday? They scored a shorthanded goal.
They did.
Yeah. Edmonton scored a shorthanded goal.
I watched that game on. I had to stream it.
And then a minute later, King comes in with the power play goal to tie it 1. So that kind of stopped Edmonton's momentum, and that kind of hushed the crowd a little bit, but. Luckily, we were still on the power play, and Kaner was able to get the tying power play goal. And,
he's been a beast this year. Didn't he have like 24 points, something like that?
24 points, 10 goals, 14 assists. He's been, he's been a changed man ever since. You know, he played overseas in Sweden during the lockout. He's had a lot of family support and a lot of support from the Blackhawks to try and get him from stop going to bars, you know, stop beating up cab drivers and whatnot. And he's becoming the hockey player everyone thought he was going to be coming out of the draft 4 or 5 years ago.
Yeah, because I remember my friend after last year we were talking, and he wanted to get Kane the hell out of town, trade him for a defenseman and all sorts, you know. But I have a Patrick Kane jersey. I'm a supporter of Patrick Kane. And like you said, I mean, he's been too much of a party animal in the past and kind of a crazy teenager, so to speak, but like you said, from what we've seen this far, he's really going to mature into a heck of a player.
My favorite player is still Marian Hossa. I just love the way he plays the game. He's just one of my favorite players on the team right now. Mm-hmm. Big Hoss.
Yes, he is Big Hoss, and with a big overtime goal against Edmonton on Monday. Before we head on to our next headline, sounds like Tyrone Johnson's back. I know I'm not watching the game.
Yeah, he is back in the game. He just airballed a three.
Oh, so he is back.
You wish he was still injured, don't you?
He's back to his old self.
Currently the score is 21-16. Is that what you currently have, Beck? I'm watching the game cast. All right, 21-16 with about 2 minutes left in the first half. So
God, I can't stand him.
I know. All right, moving on. Continuing with college basketball, March Madness is scheduled to start on Tuesday, March 19th, which is 3 weeks away from now. Who are your four number one seeds for the tournament, Becca?
Oh, let's see. I got it right here. I have, obviously Indiana, Gonzaga. I have Duke and Kansas.
Okay. Tanner?
I have Indiana, Duke, Florida, and Gonzaga.
Okay. I'm going to go with Indiana. I think we've all seen what they can do. Gonzaga, I'm going to put them there. I know it's hard to put a mid-major conference and the West Coast Conference team in there, but they've been playing out of mind with a 24-2, 26-2 record, something of that sort. And they're Kelly Okunik, their junior forward, 18 points per game and 7 boards. I like Duke, Mason Plumlee, and Seth Curry, both averaging 16-plus points per game. And my fourth team, I'm going to put Miami. A good mix of veteran and young talent. There's so many teams that can go for that fourth spot.
Do you think so?
Yeah.
I think so. I think Kansas could be, mention
Kansas, Florida, Miami.
Florida, Michigan State could be a, hard push, but I could see them ending up there. I was going to say Michigan, but shocker, they lost to Penn State just a little bit ago.
Yeah, so that's going to completely derail them.
And, depending on how the conference tournaments go, you might even see Georgetown. There's a lot of teams with four losses on the season.
Yeah, there are. You're absolutely right.
You could see Georgetown, Miami. I mean, the list goes on. Kansas, Florida, Miami, or Georgetown. One of those four teams could get that fourth spot.
Yeah.
And maybe even Louisville.
You could argue Louisville. I mean, they only have 5 losses.
Yeah.
Yeah, Michigan, like you said, Kansas, New Mexico only has 4 losses.
Yes, so there's a bunch of teams vying for that fourth number one spot. So it is going to be interesting. So, Tanner, you want to talk a little bit of Cubbies?
I mean, if you want to, we can.
They lost a heartbreaker today.
Okay, so they're 3-2.
Yes.
Because I know they were 3-1 going
into
the game. Yeah,
they started off 3-0, and then the last two games they've lost to the Dodgers.
They completely destroyed the Angels 11-2 first game of the thing.
Yeah, of Cactus League.
Yeah, there you go. But
the thing. Yeah. Did you hear about Starlin Castro? He went down with a little bit of a hamstring injury. We'll see what his prognosis is.
He's listed as day to day.
I mean, my bigger worry is Matt Garza. I mean, I know he had that back strain, and
lat muscle pull.
Yeah, we'll have to see. They're not going to play him during spring training.
I mean, they might. Coach Swaim said he'd pitch off the mound in 2 weeks.
Okay, I mean, I wouldn't be too. I mean, I'd rather have him for the season, but
I agree.
But yeah, the team. I don't know. Well, it's a building process. I don't think, especially, a couple games into spring training in general,
right,
doesn't really matter too much, because mostly it's trying to get your young guys playing time to see, where you think they're going to be,
right,
either later in the year or next year or whatever. But, yeah. The pitching staff is definitely a lot better. I mean, they've added a lot of talent with Edwin Jackson.
I love the Edwin Jackson. I think it was stupid for the White Sox to let him go a couple years ago. I know last year.
I thought so too. I mean, go ahead, Steve. You're talking.
I forgot where he was last year. I know we talked about this yesterday.
Washington.
Yeah, Washington. He had decent numbers, right around a 4 ERA.
He's a horse, though. He'll start every game of the season.
Yeah, and he'll eat up innings. Yeah, I believe he had 189 innings last year in 31 games.
Which is what the Cubs didn't have last year.
Right.
I mean, they'd have these bum starters who'd go out there and pitch 5 innings, get rocked, and then you got to bring the bullpen in for 4 innings of work almost every game, except for Jeff Smarja. I mean, Matt Garza was like that until he got hurt in July, and he was out for the year. And then the only workhorse you had was Smarja, so the pitching staff just fell apart.
I also like the Japan product that they brought in over the offseason now.
Takashi?
Kaiuji Fujikawa.
Yeah, that
guy. There you go.
That guy.
He's a bullpen pitcher, isn't he?
Yeah, he is. Good right-hander from Japan. I know he's a little bit up there in age, 33. So, you know, he's got some innings on him over there in Japan. But
at least being a bullpen pitcher, you don't get worn out too, you know, it's not as bad as being a starter.
To me, I think he's going to replace Carlos Marmol if Marmol doesn't, you know.
You don't think Marmol's going to, I mean, they said he's going to be the closer going into the season.
If he doesn't have his woes, I think he's traded by the deadline. If he shows like his normal self, maybe not as dominant, but still able to get the job done in the later innings and get the saves, I think the Cubs are going to try and trade him to get some, you know, some more younger prospects, and I think you're going to see Fujikawa.
I would agree.
In that
I mean,
safe position.
What about
go ahead.
At first I thought you were going to talk about the other pitcher that we got from Los Angeles. Hisanoi Takashi. Have you seen that guy?
Yes, I do.
That's the other one. That's who I originally thought you were going to talk about. But yeah, I mean, I think they made a lot of moves for pitchers this year, and that's definitely where we lacked last year.
And that's exactly what Theo Epstein said. He says you're going to see a lot more improvement coming from the bullpen and starting rotation. Maybe not from the starting rotation because you don't have Ryan Dempster there. I think you're going to see a little less wins. Right now, SI has the Cubs projected to have 76 wins, which is a little bit better than their 100 losses last year.
Here's my question. Do you think that Ryan Dempster's season last year was a fluke? Because, I mean, if you look at his recent past, I mean, he hasn't been all that good. I mean, last year he was amazing with the Cubs. Don't get me wrong. He had a 2.5 ERA.
I think everyone has their years.
But Ryan Dempster's up there. He's 35. I'm kind of happy the Cubs didn't keep him and give him a big deal because, you know, I mean, the Cubs are trying to get younger. And aside from last year, I mean, you know, his ERA in 2011 was 4.8. Okay. So, we'll see. Like you said, it does hurt because Ryan Dempster, regardless of what he does, he is an inning eater. Right. I mean, if you had a rotation of Dempster, Garza, Samardzija, and Jackson, that rotation would do some real damage. But, you know, I think this team is serviceable. It's way more serviceable than the team last year.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Who had, 101 losses? First 100 loss season in how long?
It was a long time.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. It's going to be interesting, continue to be interesting for the Cactus League, for the Cubs. And it's going to be interesting just for this year, offensively and defensively and in pitching. You know, Anthony Rizzo is going to have his full year up here at first base for the Cubs.
Mm-hmm.
Starlin Castro is hopefully going to keep seeing improved numbers, you know, keep seeing progress in his offense, especially in his defense. I know he's been struggling a little bit since coming up from the minors at shortstop. Who else we got? We got Darwin Barney, you know, Gold Glover at second
Gold
base.
Gold Glover now, yeah.
And one thing, we have a lot of catchers on this roster. We have one, two, I'm looking at their spring training. We have six catchers currently that are in the Cubs camp. No Giovanni Soto this year.
Thank God.
It's most likely going to be Clevinger.
Or Castillo.
One of those are probably going to be the two that are going to be on the starting roster come April, come opening day. Then it's a fight to see who's going to be playing in AAA in Iowa there. It's going to be interesting to see. And it's also going to be interesting to see how some products that we are going to probably be looking to trade come trade deadline in Alfonso Soriano.
Yeah.
And maybe some other pitching, you know, and some of our prospects down in the minors to hopefully get up to that potential, you know. Epstein said it himself, look for this team to make a run in 2015, and I think that's been everyone's ideal year for the Cubs. It seems like that's going to be the focus in Chicago teams. You know, the Bulls, you know, right now, not sure about Derrick Rose, especially next year, not knowing. It looks like it's going to be around 2015 for them to make a run. Now you got the Cubs making a run in 2015. Who knows about the White Sox? 2015, I think, is going to be a great year for Chicago sports.
You know, I saw a really funny meme today that had like the last meteor to hit Russia was 1908, and then the meteor that hit Russia this year, right, 2013, and the last Cubs World Series was 1908. So,
I like our odds.
I mean, you'd honestly have to have a miracle if the Cubs. I mean,
you know, these things do happen. There's teams every year that play really good that nobody predicts, but, I mean, for the Cubs to even get to the World Series this year is would have to be a miracle. I mean, you'd have to have Rizzo hit 35 home runs. You'd have to have Soriano hit 40. You know, you'd have to have Garza win the Cy Young. I mean, you'd have to have all sorts of crazy stuff for the Cubs to be able to make the playoffs this year. I don't know. I don't think it's going to happen, but I think, yeah, low 70s, I think that's a good winning.
Not like your guys' 81-81 record. Last
hey,
year.
That actually, you know, when they brought up Anthony Rizzo last year, the team started playing really good until Garza got hurt and the pitching rotation went. Remember that?
Yes.
They got like within 5 games of .500. I think they were like 45-50.
Yeah.
And then stupid Garza gets injured and the rotation falls apart.
I like their chances. I think they'll be, you know, middle of the pack, and then, you know, if they get some good luck and some guys get streaky and, you know,
stay healthy.
Yeah.
It's really going to be up to Soriano, I think. He's going to be the, I mean, granted, like you said, if he has a good season, the Cubs might try and dish him, but, you know what you're going to get from Castro, granted, if he's healthy, we'll see. You hope you know what you're going to get from Rizzo. I mean, we're hoping he's the future. But I think you're going to need Soriano to get, you know, 30 and 100 again for the Cubs to be competitive. And, I mean, can he do that? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean,
he's what, 30? Is he still 37? Or is he 38 now? I don't know.
He's up
but
there.
Either way, he's up there.
Right.
So for him to duplicate what he did last year is going to be tough. But if he can get around 30 and 100, I mean, I think the Cubs could easily win mid-70s, you know. Yeah. I'm not going to say 81, but I would say mid to high 70s.
Yeah. Before we head on to our final word, you know, the Cubs do have a better chance in their division with Houston going into the AL. You know, last year it was a 1-6 chance. Well, now we have a 1-5 chance. So,
but the also big concern is Houston's usually the beat up team.
True.
So
I mean,
we lost the team we got to bully.
So right now the Cubs are the front runner to be last in the Central Division. So
yeah,
hopefully,
I mean, unless
that's
the
not
Pirates
the case.
Fall apart.
Unless the Pirates continue their streak of sub 500. Regular season seasons,
and
so
and that all starts in what in like August, because they're like contending until August, and then they fall apart.
It's like they want to make a move at the trade deadline because, you know, they're right at 500, a couple games over. They don't make a move, and then
like what 3 years ago they got Derek Lee,
so
and then they tanked.
Yeah, I mean, they just need to, you know, kind of do like the Blackhawks are doing. You know, they just need to take it game by game and not worry about, you know, the postseason. Just play and have fun, and you'll
good fundamental baseball.
Exactly. So. Exactly.
All right, guys. Any final word before we close out here?
When are we going to do this again?
Me and Becca were thinking bi-weekly.
Bi-weekly. I think we could swing that.
I'm down with that. That's fun with me.
Yeah, bi-weekly. So our next show will be during our spring break.
And we know our fans love to hear us.
We know it, too. And I got up our podcast website up now. It's looking nice and new and spiffy.
There we go.
There you go.
So,
all right.
People will be able to search for us on iTunes or go to our podcast website and hear or download our song anytime they want.
There we go.
It's iPod friendly, Droid friendly. It's everything friendly.
It's smartphone.
We're
smart friendly
guys.
Yeah, we're giving.
You know what? It might even work on flip phones. Someone out there must have a flip phone. They can try it out.
Some people still do.
They do. I've seen a couple in the hospital.
Got to get the Razor.
Oh man,
I had a Razor.
Did you really?
I did have a Motorola Razor.
Nice.
Yep, and that was cool because you could take a picture of yourself in front and look on the screen and see what you're taking a picture of without opening the phone. Oh, those were the days.
Oh man, wasn't that awesome? God, that's like high school.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I had it junior year before the iPhone.
There we go.
All right, Tanner, let's wrap it up here.
Absolutely. Next time on Sports Night, we will break down and analyze the games played by the Purdue men's basketball team and the Purdue baseball team. Remember to follow us on Twitter at PU Sports Tweets and find us on Facebook at Purdue Sports Tweets. This is Mike Tanner.
This is Mike Becca.
And this is Steve Draza signing off. And as always,
boiler up.
Have a good night, everybody.
is this sweet? She said my boy is a dagger. Oh yeah. I was gunned, she was hot, stealing everything she got. I was bone, she was over the worst of it. Give me gear, thank you dear, bring your sister over here. Let her dance with me just for the hell of it. Could I just have kept the last of my clothes on? Oh yeah. Call me up, take me down with you when you go. I could be your regular bell. And I'll see dance for little Steven and Johanna around the back of my hotel. Oh yeah. I was good, she was hot, stealing everything she got. I was bold, she was over the worst of it. Give me a kiss, thank you dear, bring your sister over here. Let her dance with me just for the hell.